Text 51551. The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Good afternoon, Paul Weller.
Hello, is that Ray?
Yeah, this is Ray D'Arcy here.
Hello, mate.
This is a real treat. Now, you've been part of my life for over 40 years, Paul, and you didn't even know it. So it's a real treat. Congratulations on solo album number 16, Fat Pop Volume 1.
Yeah.
So this is two albums in sort of less than a year.
It is indeed, yeah. We had On Sunset, which came out last June. And this new one, Fat Pop, comes out in a couple of weeks' time.
And would that have happened if there was no lockdown?
No, definitely not, because you know we'd have put out On Sunset, and then we were going to go on the road just after that, and go on a world tour pretty much anyway. So we wouldn't have been back in the studio for not until autumn of next year or something like that, you know. So. But yeah, obviously that never happened, and it just gave me all this free time.
Yeah.
And I just thought, how can I use this? How can I use it constructively and not go mental? And so I made a record, yeah. And I've done other things as well. You know, I've worked with other people as well during that course.
And how did it colour the album? You know, are the songs different as a result of lockdown?
No, I don't personally think so. I mean, I consciously thought I'm not going to write any songs about it, that's for sure, because there'd be enough people probably doing that. So that was never on the cards. But it didn't really. All it gave me was time to sit down, right? And I've always got a lot of ideas. I keep loads of ideas on my phone stored up, and I also write lots of nonsense in my notepad. So it just gave me all this time to collate all these little ideas that are floating about and try and harness them and make them into something. And which was nice. I mean, it was a kind of different experience because it was sort of like I didn't have any sort of time period to finish it or start. Well, I started it whenever I started it, and I didn't, but I wasn't looking up when it needs to be finished or anything like that. I just kind of see where this all leads to, you know. And it just kind of just sort of snowballed from that, you know. I got more and more ideas as it went on. And then we got, the lockdown was lifted last summer, so I got together with the band again. And that was nice, just for us all to play together.
Yeah.
And, and then before we knew it, we'd finished sort of by October. So it came together sort of fairly quickly in some ways, you know.
So like, you've made a conscious decision to keep most of the songs very short. Like, they're all perfect pop songs when it comes to duration.
Yeah.
Why so?
That was, yeah. I just wanted to make it that way. I thought that was, I liked the title, I liked Fat Pop, and I didn't really know what it meant at the time. I'm still not too sure, but I liked the title. It kind of, I just intrigued me and I liked it. And so I just try to keep the songs that way, really, just very concise and structured. And you know, I suppose getting away from what we did on Sunset, which I loved, you know, but it was a bit more expansive on that.
And lush.
It's a lot more improvised.
Yeah.
Lush and stuff, yeah, exactly. So I just wanted to be a bit more structured, and also a lot more live as well. We pretty much did most of the tracks live at some point.
Brilliant. You say that Fat Pop, the title track, is your favourite song. Do I hear you laughing in that? Is there a laugh in it?
Well, it could be, yeah.
Yeah.
It's the sort of song you could do that in.
Yeah. I think there's a little sort of from Paul Weller in the middle of it.
Yeah,
there.
It could be.
Yeah, yeah. So you were having fun when you were recording it?
I did, yeah. I was loving it. I was under no pressure. And you know, thank God I had my studio to work in as well. I mean,
yeah.
That was, you know, made everything so much better. And so I was having fun. Yeah, I was just, yeah, no, no one else to please or times to finish by. I was just doing my thing and seeing where it led to.
Mm.
And that was, yeah, that was good fun.
How does it contrast, you know, from the very first Jam album to this, your 16th solo album? Because back then, the release of an album, vinyl, the whole thing was quite different, wasn't it?
It was entirely different, man. Yeah, we're talking about a totally different world. Where could I begin? I
mean, yes, we'll try.
Like 40 plus years of history has elapsed, and everything in that time has changed. You know, recording methods have changed, how people receive their music has changed. how artists get paid for their music has definitely changed.
Yeah. Can you remember the excitement of that first Jam album? Like you were in your late teens, were you?
I was in my late teens. I was 18 or yeah. 18, 19 maybe. Well, it was really quick, you know. I mean, basically we just played our live set, so we didn't deliberate on anything too much. We were green to all of it. But as in terms of what's changed, I mean, I wouldn't even know where to start because it's a different world, you know. Yeah. And when people, younger artists, have said to me, ask me for any sort of advice or people starting off, I'm just like, I don't know anymore. I honest to God don't know, apart from just, you know, keep at it and perseverance and don't sway from your initial vision.
Mm.
You know what I mean? But beyond that, I couldn't say, yeah, go and see this person at this company because it'd be a complete and utter waste of time for them. Yeah. You know? So it's a very different world. I mean, I can remember like when we started off before we got signed, I can remember me and my old man taking like demo tapes around. This was like 1974 or 5 or whatever. And we would just turn up at Decca Records or wherever it may be and ask to see an A&R person, you know. And most of the time we got in and saw them and played our little crappy tapes and they told us, you know, thanks but no thanks. But you'd never do that now, obviously.
No. And your dad was your manager, John.
He was, yeah.
And he was a taxi driver and a builder and your mum was a cleaner. So the world in which you were a child and the world in which your children are children, completely different. I'm fascinated to know how you sort of bring your working class values with you and try and pass them on to your children, or do you?
With great difficulty, because they can't help but, you know, be products of what they've grown up in, you know, which is a privileged lifestyle. You know, can't really call it anything else than that. Really, we're lucky. We're good for money. We've got a nice house. I would say the dad, you know, their dad's got is employable, but it's hard to say at the moment. But it's entirely, entirely, entirely different world, Joe. And when I try to explain to them the sort of house I used to live in and was brought up in, and they have no concept of it. It's hard for them to see that, you know. But the only thing, probably the only thing from my background that I try to instill in all of them, whether it gets through, I don't know, but it's just the whole work ethic thing, really, that you only get what you put in, you know, and nothing comes for free, you know. Because I think it's easy, if you're growing up in privilege, that things appear to be easy, and life is easy, you know, and it ain't, as we all know, or a lot of us know, anyway.
Yeah.
Just to, you know, to always work and be lazy, man.
Yeah. Your daughter helped you out on the album, on Shades of Blue.
She did, yeah.
Your daughter, Leah.
Yeah.
So what was that like, working with your daughter?
Oh, it's great, man. It's pretty good fun and nice and easy. And, yeah, we had fun doing it, really. We just sat around a piano in a kitchen in a cottage near the studio. And we just had a family sing-along, really. And then I had the song anyway, I had the verses, but I couldn't find my way into the chorus, and so she came up with the chorus and just helped shape it, really. And it was great, yeah. And then we cut the vocals the next day, and there it was, you know.
Mm. One of your twins has he's only 9, but he's very sort of informed when it comes to art. What did he say?
Well, I was talking to him about my songs. I said, you know, make sure you try and look after my catalogue when I'm gone, right? Monday when I'm gone, make sure you look after it. And he said to me, yeah, he said, but I think great art belongs to everyone.
Age nine,
yeah. I don't know what film he got it from or whatever, man.
Well, he didn't lick it off a stone, yeah. Listen, your name has come up an awful lot recently on the show because of your work with Declan O'Rourke.
So we
got his version of events. So what's your version of the story? How did you come to work with each other?
Well, Dec just called me and he asked me whether I'd be up producing these records. And the first thing I said to him was, you don't need a producer. You know, he's so good and he's so talented. I don't know what a producer would do for him. But he was very insistent. So I said, well, send me the songs. You know, we'll send you some demos or whatever you've got and see if I can... if I feel I can do anything with it, you know, or I could help or whatever, have some input, you know. And but anyway, so but Declan was very insistent that I do it. So I tried it, and it was, I think it was successful, really, you know, I would say. And I mean, I love his work anyway, from the first time I heard his first album. We were both on the same label at that time, at V2. And Galileo is just like, well, probably one of the all-time favourite songs, man. I just think it's, well, just classic anyway.
Have you ever sang it?
Yeah, I tried, I did. We did it in Dublin, right, at the... what's it called, the gig there, man?
The Three Arena, the Olympia.
The Olympia, of course, Olympia. So, yeah, we did it at the Olympia a few years ago, and me and Dex sang it anyway. And he came on with us and we sang it with the band.
Yeah.
How good it was, I don't know, man. That fella's on a different level, man. He's on another level, I think, musically. His guitar playing alone is just...
Oh, yeah, the opening of The Harbour. You were there when that was recorded, obviously. Yeah. But there's something very special about that, isn't
like,
there?
Yeah. Incredible, man. And it's just like, could be like two or three guitar players, and it's just...
Do you find you're more mellow now, Paul Weller? Does that happen with age?
Yeah, definitely. Absolutely, yeah. Thank God, yeah. Because I wouldn't want to be as uptight or angry as I was when I was a kid, you know. It'd be exhausting. So, yeah, definitely. Yeah. I think I've definitely mellowed, and I'm sure that some of that's to do with a lot of that's to do with age, and some of it's also just to become comfortable with myself as well, you know, and know myself better, and be a bit more forgiving on myself if things I don't live up to, and you know, lots of things, man. It's deep, but yeah, I most definitely have become more mellow,
Because people listening would look at you, Paul Weller, and they'd see this dapper, hugely talented man who's been making brilliant music for nearly 50 years, and they'd say, how could you doubt yourself? How could you, Paul Weller, doubt yourself ever?
Well, if I didn't doubt myself, I probably wouldn't be sitting here now with you having this conversation, so... let alone be on to my 16th solo album, because within that doubt, even though it's, you know, sometimes it's difficult with it, but within that doubt, I think you it keeps you on track. I think it keeps you on edge and not get lazy and don't get complacent and not just think it's all easy and it all just sort of falls in a place, you know, because I think there's a lot of work required in doing it all, you know, and consistent thing, you know, and just, you know, keep your tools sharpened, as the old saying goes, because you never know when you're going to need them.
Are your tools sharper? I know you're sober 11 years now. We've spoken to a number of people who have found lockdown particularly difficult, people who, you know, are recovering alcoholics. Was it difficult for you, or did you just immerse yourself in music?
Hopefully, right. I'm beyond that point now.
Oh, where
I wouldn't drink, you know. Funny, there's been a few times last year, maybe once, I got really tempted. I didn't get really tempted. I thought about drinking anyway. And that was the first time in a long, long time anyway, which I didn't do. But I think I'm past that point, because I think of the other sort of downside of drinking, you know, and that kind of wins over every time, really. So I'm much happier with my life, you know, being sober and seeing things differently and being more present and try and live in the moment more. So why would I go back? You know, do you know what I mean? Those things would keep me away from all of that.
Why would you, yeah? Yeah, I was reading somewhere there that did you, and this is going right back to Band-Aid time, sorry about this, but did you mime Bono's words on Top of the Pops?
I did, yeah.
Oh, did you? Right.
I did, yeah. How I come to fucking do that, I don't know, mate. But anyway, I think Sir Bob asked me if I would do it.
Right.
I think.
Right. So there's loads of Irish connections. Of course, you've worked with Conor O'Brien from Villagers as well, and One of the lads on the Stripes as well. So you keep an eye on what's happening over here. Yeah.
Yeah, you've got so much talent there, man. As you obviously, I'm not telling you about it, but there's so much talent in Ireland, and well, there's just so much music that's come from your island.
Did I hear a jazz flute on one of the songs? Testify. Is there jazz?
Yeah, but is it what? Is it a jazz flute? It is definitely a flute.
Yeah,
I would call it more of a sort of funky jazz flute.
Funky jazz flute. Yeah, yeah. It's brilliant. It suits it. It's great. I was so loving the album because there's so much going on there. Like, and even within a 3-minute song, there's so much going on. You're a real craftsman.
Yeah, thank you, man.
Yeah, and this is the other thing. I've been a huge fan forever, but I've never immersed myself in the little minutiae of your life. I was a bit shocked to find out that status quo were the sort of the catalyst for you becoming who you are.
Fucking moves to me, man.
There you go. But there you go. Clarify that before we go, Paul. Were you ever at a status quo? Were you ever at a status quo gig?
Yeah. But anyway, listen. The catalyst for me is the Beatles,
right?
No doubt, hands down, right?
Yeah.
And everything else I heard after them was just a bonus,
right?
We loved Quo. We liked them around that time. When I say me and the band at the time, right? We went to see him in 1972 at the Guildford Civic, right?
Yeah.
But I liked all the albums like Mark Kelly's Greasy Spoon and Dog of Two Heads.
Yeah.
Maybe up to Pole Driver I liked anyway. But they were good, man. And that was the first live band I'd ever seen, apart from like seeing people in a little workingman's club or a pub or something, but a proper sort of concert hall. And I'd never heard music that loud before. And I just thought that was the most fantastic thing ever.
Yeah.
I'd be totally blasted by sound, you know.
Yeah. Thanks so much for taking time out to talk to us. Fat Pop, Volume 1 is out next Friday, and we're already looking forward to Volume 2. Paul Weller, thank you.
Yeah, bless you. Thanks for your time, mate.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.